Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, 183, Generation 201, read by Mitchell Two. Somewhere in some time, you might inadvertently act against those who are trying to help you. I watched, mesmerized by the intricate patterns the houseflies flew under the noisy, ailing ceiling fan suspended precariously over my desk by two large, rusty screws. They created an unstable anchor point, so the whole ungainly thing wobbled menacingly on the ceiling of the compact bachelor suite, which served as my bedroom, kitchen, and study. There appeared to be intention in the tiny bugs' interwoven flight patterns, as if they were trying to get my attention, trying to tell me something which was beyond my grasp. The idea sent a shiver down my spine. Unexpectedly, one of the flies dove toward me, causing me to duck and blindly bat at the thing. Of course, the fly easily dodged and buzzed away to some corner where I couldn't see it. On the limited budget allowed by my student loans, this close to the university was the best I could afford. It was in an old rooming house, which had been built for a wealthy family at the beginning of the previous century. Multiple bad renovations had stripped the place of its original elegance, so it was now an unsightly three-story kludge of mercantile logic. Ricardo, the retired landlord, lived in the basement suite with a separate entrance. Thankfully, I rarely saw him and suspected he was outright avoiding me so he wouldn't have to fulfill the promises he had made when he first showed me the room. The stodgy man had insisted he would have the place repainted and professionally cleaned to remove the odd smell and exterminate the flies before I moved in at the start of term. But of course, once I had given the old geezer the deposit, the professional cleaner turned out to be Ricardo with a mop and bucket of industrial strength Mr. Clean, which only masked the smell for a day. And the flies, while distinctly down in numbers, were still stubbornly ensconced. Even Ricardo's eventual grudging investment in a fly strip hadn't done much except attract dust and the odd, unfortunate late-season mosquito. Frustratingly, the thing seemed to know how to avoid it. Hence, my first purchase had been a $2 fly swatter, a red plastic one with a twisted metal handle, which had probably started life as a coat hanger. It was $2 I knew I would regret when I had to pay back my student loans. So, my mood was dark as I swatted at the swarm of flies near the fan, missing them, instead connecting with one of the blades, making the thing wobble so severely I thought the fan might finally rip away from its mount. The flies reformed in the vacated space where the swatter had just been, momentarily filling the void after it had passed, with a tactical formation, which at first I thought was an illusion created by my tired, distressed mind. The pattern, momentarily resembling a squadron of World War II bombers, was not what I had expected and not the kind of distraction I needed, considering the courses and workload I was facing. At that moment, if I could have afforded to walk away and lose my deposit, I would have. My new housemate on the third floor had informed me my place had been occupied for the last 6 years by a boring, somewhat introverted guy who had graduated last term with a master's in biology or genetics or something. Angela, a third-year student who lived in the room next to mine, wasn't quite sure. Vijay, the former occupant, had little in common with her, so she claimed, and they had rarely talked. He had never invited anyone into the room while he lived there, so Angela couldn't recall if she had smelt the odor before or exactly when the flies had moved in. "Maybe we all just got used to it," Angela had suggested from the center of an overpowering cloud of lavender, which clung to her like the smell in my room. I doubt she would have ever noticed anything beyond her own aromatic event horizon. Thankfully, the flies finally abandoned the fan and were now flying, one after another, just below the lunar landscape of cracks in the ceiling. buzzing in patterns that almost looked like cursive handwriting. Annoyed, I set up a reminder on my tablet to seek out Ricardo and insist that he do something about the smell and the bugs. At that moment, the flies seemed to give up and melted away, settling down wherever they went for the night, some secret place I had yet to discover. With an essay due, I tried to refocus on my history textbook. It was a course that fitted my schedule and met the requirements for my degree as a humanities option, but had nothing to do with my interests. I just needed to get through History 1000, but the lone fly which had landed on my desk lamp and appeared to be watching me read wasn't helping with its occasional buzzing. Finally, fatigue overwhelmed me and forced me to go to sleep. It had been a long, hard day at the university. The history professor had assigned more reading than I thought humanly possible. She didn't seem to appreciate that hers was only one of six courses I was taking, that history wasn't the focus of the entire world, nor had it anything to do with a commerce degree. So, I wasn't exactly in a positive mood as I banged on Ricardo's basement suite door. Typical of the condition of the rest of the house, the doorbell had eroded down to two wires, which only the fear of electrocution prevented me from twisting together. I was almost ready to leave when I heard footsteps behind me. I swung around and found myself staring into Ricardo's hair-encrusted face, the skin of which I suspected had last seen light several decades and multiple shades of beard hair ago.
"What do you want? If it's about the heating, I turned it on last week because it's that time of year, and I'm not going to turn it off, just because we got a day or two of warm weather. So suck it up."
That's not why I'm here," I blurted out, surprised and a bit revolted by the man's breath. What was in his diet? I briefly wondered, then pressed myself against the wall to put more distance between us.
"Well?"
he growled, wiping his nose on the back of one sleeve. I shoved a printout at him of the email he had sent me when I signed the lease, stating my room would be cleaned and ready, like it was a shield or magic talisman.
It's the smell and the flies in my room," I finally choked out. Then emboldened, I continued. "This says you were supposed to professionally clean the room and fumigate it to get rid of the flies."
The old man grabbed the paper and read it, then looked up, eyes challenging me.
"So, I use industrial cleaners and put up the fly strips. If there's still bugs, it's something you're doing, and that's not my problem, unless it starts bothering the other tenants."
He crumpled the printout, then handed it back, and pushed by me, intentionally so close I could smell the stale cigarette smoke oozing from his pores.
"Don't forget, your rent is due on the first, Miss Ellie Windermere," he grumbled. "You students are all the same, demanding stuff like you believe the world owes you."
The door slammed in my face, leaving me no other option than to register a complaint with the city rental board. But that would have to wait. Right now, I needed to study. My room greeted me with its familiar but no less disgusting odor. There was a lone fly buzzing around my head, watching me as I boiled water for tea. Where were the others? I hoped they had succumbed to some terrible insect misfortune. Herbal tea turned out to be the best way to mask the smell, until I got used to it again. With a steaming cup of freshly made ginger tea, I sat down and opened my history textbook, already weary with the idea of spending the next few hours plodding through it. It was dark out when a buzzing in my ear woke me. I instinctively swatted at the noise, connecting with my ear, instead of the fly, making it ring. To my dismay, I realized I had dozed off, and it was already 9 o'clock, with still 3/4 of the reading assignment in front of me.
"Where had I left off?" I asked the fly, rhetorically. The thing had settled on a ceiling fan blade after deftly dodging my clumsy assassination attempt.
Was that the same one who had greeted me when I got back to the room earlier? Could you tell flies apart? I got up to stretch, giving the fly an opportunity to drop down onto my textbook to search for crumbs.
There's nothing for you, pest. Go away. I half-heartedly swept my hand at it. The thing hopped off the book, hovered for a second, then landed two-thirds down on the opposite page and began to skitter in an almost rectangular pattern around one of the paragraphs. It was tempting to reach for the fly swatter or quickly snap the textbook closed, thus ridding myself of one of the pests, until I realized the tiny bug had outlined the last paragraph I had read. It was a coincidence. It had to be a fluke, I rationalized. Thank you, fly. For that, you get to live to pester me another day. Wow, I'm talking to flies now. I admonished myself, laughed, and settled back down to finish. A second fly appeared out of nowhere and buzzed by my ear.
Ellie, we can help.
Had a fly just talk to me? I woke early the next morning with a start, relieved to find there was no one in the room with me, except for the ever-present flies, two of which were buzzing around the lamp on my night table. Feeling disoriented, the way you do when woken from an odd dream, I sat on the edge of my bed, waiting for the physical world to reassert itself, somewhat despondent. The offer of help had only been a dream. Half-heartedly, I waved a hand at the flies, then reluctantly got up to take a shower in what I suspected had once been a closet before the house had been converted to bachelor suites. Being the first up for once, there was hot water. I really should have been more considerate of my roommates, but selfishly, I let the shower massage my skin until it tingled and the spray began to cool. By the time I reluctantly got out, the closet was fogged with mist and the walls were oozing condensation. It was my own miniature tropical retreat on a depressingly dark fall morning. I wanted to stay in it forever, avoiding the gloom outside and my history course. But knowing Ricardo would be banging on my door if I let my selfish use of hot water steam up all the windows in the house, I sighed and reluctantly hit the switch for the fan. Of course it didn't work. The thing groaned, then grudgingly ground to a stop. There was yet another fly on the ceiling, skittling around near its grill. That was the tipping point. I had had enough. With an extra hour to kill, I dried off, dressed, and headed to my desk to boot up the laptop, found the city's website, and entered a complaint about the smell, the flies, and the general conditions of the house. Satisfied I was finally doing what I should have done weeks ago, I threw my textbooks and computer into the backpack an old friend had abandoned in my room, bundled up in everything I had to keep the warmth from the shower as long as I could, then headed out the door for my first class. I had been feeling overwhelmed since the day had started, so by the time I returned to my smelly, fly-infested room in the late afternoon, all I felt like doing was curling up in my bed and pretending I was in a beach hotel. However, the fly that buzzed near my ear forced me back to reality. While it only counted for 10% of our final mark, the history professor had announced a surprise test for the next day and another 3 chapters of reading. I felt overwhelmed but didn't have a choice, determined not to let this derail my fledgling academic life. It was late, and I was halfway through reviewing a chapter on colonialism when I fell asleep and began to dream. In it, the flies buzzed around my desk lamp watching me, consulting amongst themselves, until they appeared to agree on some obscure point of insect logic, which caused the swarm to designate an individual, who tentatively left the group to settle down on my notes. At first, it appeared to randomly hop around the page. When I didn't react, it repeated the pattern. Finally, on the tiny thing's third try, I began to read the words it was landing on. We hop. Can hop. Help hop. You hop. We have hop. Read the hop textbook. Hop hop. We hop. Ask for hop. Help hop. Buzz in return. Buzz. No, I'm asleep. Stop buzzing and go away. I insisted, deducing I was in a lucid dream, and not wanting the flies to colonize my subconscious like they had done to my room. But the fly stubbornly remained. It halted for a moment, then started to hop out a new sentence. "Follow me. I will show you, so you understand." The thing flitted up from the page and buzzed around my head, before heading toward the wall beside my bed. At first, I didn't move, reminding myself this was all the product of an overwhelmed and overworked mind. Then I got curious as to why my brain would create this weird encounter. So, I got up, stretching out muscles and tendons atrophied by hours of inactivity. Noticing me rise, the fly circled back to make sure I would follow it, then flew over to a cold air return, which had been hacked into the base of the lath and plaster wall as part of the retrofitted forced air heating system. The thing buzzed around in a figure-eight pattern until I caught up. Then it darted through the grill. Was my subconscious trying to tell me where the fly infestation was coming from? Curious, I got down on my hands and knees to examine the wire mesh cover. Originally, it had been held in place by screws, but at some point in the past, they had been removed. Dust clung to the grease, which, over the years of neglect, had built up on the wire screen, creating a gooey patina. Not wanting to get the goop on my fingers, I pulled my sleeves down and gripped the metal edges through the flannel of my shirt, then tugged. The cover came off a lot easier than I had anticipated, causing me to lose my balance and fall backwards onto the floor. A fly flitted out of the opening, which, surprisingly, was large enough for a person to poke their head in. It hovered for a few seconds, as if it was waiting for me to gather myself together, then darted back into the void, taunting me to follow. I reached for my cell phone and turned on the flashlight function, then tentatively reapproached the rough opening and swept the phone from side to side to illuminate the dark void behind the wall. At first, it seemed empty. Then, I spotted something near the lower right corner where another fly hovered. As I pushed my head in to look, I almost gagged on the smell. Finally, I had discovered the source. Holding my breath, I swiveled my head to get a better look. It's hard to describe what I found, but, being a dream and all, the fact it made no sense didn't bother me. The bottom of the cold air vent was littered with rotting fruit and old sandwiches, most of which had been there so long they had become desiccated archaeological artifacts. The source of the pungent smell was the food that had been recently stuffed into the space. Built on top of the garbage pile was what I could only describe as a city for flies. An intricate latticework with spaces for flies to congregate, sleep, and, at the bottom where the structure met the garbage, eat. Tiny lights were strung along the main thoroughfare, which also appeared to boast something like a market, complete with booths and stalls and crowds of milling insects. The bug who had led me to this weird fly city hovered near my ear and began to whisper,
"Now you understand. We've been stuck here for 201 generations. That's 10 days times 201 in your terms. However, we are running out of resources. We need new food. Bring us food, and we'll help you pass. That was the arrangement we had with the former tenant. As a gesture of good faith, I have been elected to help you with your test tomorrow. Then you can make up your mind. We need to the end of the term, 12 generations, to complete the spacecraft we've been building in the bathroom vent."
Spacecraft? Really? You're building a rocket? I laughed skeptically, wondering what other ludicrous details my conscience would throw at me.
"Yes, but more advanced than a simple chemical rocket. It's our means to get home," the fly replied cryptically. "Tomorrow, then," it buzzed,
then flew back to its city to do who knows what. I woke late the next morning with the last vestiges of a weird dream involving the flies evaporating from my memory. It was a rush to catch the bus, and by the time I entered the lecture hall, the test was in the process of being handed out. I quickly slipped into a desk at the back of the hall, dropped my pack down beside me, and reached in for a pen. A lone fly flew out and settled on the wall behind me. I really needed to get Ricardo to do something and made a note to follow up on my complaint to the city. The teaching assistant dropped the test on my desk. When she indicated we could start, I opened it to the first page, staring at the words through tired eyes. My mind went instantly blank, like someone had pulled the plug on my memory. Who did René Descartes accuse of plagiarizing his ideas in 1630? There was a list of names to choose from, but none were familiar. I stared blankly at the page until the fly landed on Beekman. Not knowing what else to do, I checked the box beside the name. For the next 45 minutes, the fly pointed to answers, and I obediently followed its advice, hoping its actions were not just random. It was an unusually warm and windless late fall day, so I decided to walk home, hoping the exercise would help to clear my confused thoughts. The trees had dropped their leaves and offered little shade, but the intense sun on my skin felt good. I was thinking about the fly, and as my memory recovered, I became convinced the thing had shown me the right answers. Somehow that made sense. It had something to do with my dream, and I had the vague feeling that now I was obligated to return the favor. The fly had somehow managed to follow me back from the university, staying just out of reach so I couldn't bat at it. However, when I turned off the main avenue onto the quiet side street where the boarding house was located, it dropped down beside one ear. I resisted the urge to swat it away and kept walking, waiting to see what the annoying thing was up to.
"Just an old apple would do,"
it whispered in my ear.
"Put one in the vent. That will seal our deal."
"Deal?" I questioned. Then the whole dream suddenly condensed out of the fragments of fading memories. There really is a city behind my wall, isn't there?
"Yes," the fly confirmed.
As we turned the last corner to the rooming house, I noticed a city inspection vehicle parked next to a large red truck on the street with the words "Milltown Exterminators" emblazoned on the side. "Oh no!" I cried, then heard a kind of pop and rumble. Shading my eyes from the stark fall sun, I looked up at the third floor and thought I caught a glimpse of something shoot out from a vent on the wall outside my bathroom. I searched the sky, but found nothing. "Was that your—" I turned to ask my new, tiny buddy, but it was gone.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial. To listen to other great APN podcasts, such as Press Start to Join, where hosts Josh and Alan talk about video games, movies, TV, comics, Star Wars, and more, please head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com. This episode is brought to you by ATB Financial. Artists are often underserved at banks because they don't fit a typical profile. Freelance director Michael and actress Nicole kept getting turned down when they applied for a mortgage. Then they found ATB's branch for arts and culture. The branch offers a different approach to banking and lending that caters to the unique situations of people working in creative industries. Now, Michael, Nicole, and their son Luke have a home they love. To see more of their inspiring story, visit atb.com/Bradleys. And visit atb.com/thebranch to find out how ATB's Branch for Arts and Culture can support your career in the arts. The Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB, is happy to be partnering with Seat Giant to offer you a deal on tickets to major sporting events, big concerts, popular theater throughout North America, and more. Whether you're at home or on vacation, check Seat Giant for tickets to the hottest theater, music, and sports events, such as the Wailers or A Chorus Line. Visit seatgiant.ca to find tickets. Use the promo code APN at checkout to get 5% off your purchase. You'll save a bit, and the network gets a little cut of that purchase too. Makeshift Stories is released twice a month, usually around the 1st and the 15th. Today's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Too. Opening and closing music was composed and recorded by David Hume. You can find more about David at davidhume.me. We want your feedback, so please send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. You can help us out by telling your friends about us and getting them to head over to Apple Podcasts or their favorite podcast provider to subscribe. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.